Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Blog Talk Radio, you're listening to The Best Hour with your host Tony Williamson and the Mighty Companions. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com/course mastery, or just search for us at Blog Talk Radio, The Best Hour. Each day during The Best Hour broadcast, we journey into a better understanding of A Course in Miracles. With over 2 million copies in print, this beautiful scripture, first published in 1975, has been translated into many languages worldwide. If you want to talk with our host during the broadcast today, just dial 347-324-5114, 347-324-5114. And now, here's your host for the best hour, Tony Williamson.
Good morning, my brothers and sisters. Glad to be with you this Friday morning. It is April 25th, and we are continuing in our journey, our exploration of the meaning behind and underneath and throughout A Course in Miracles. And we've been studying Chapter 11, and we just finished a long section, actually, yesterday, The Dynamics of the Ego, and it was very instructive. And we're learning a lot. We're learning a lot. And, you know, I was telling my sweet love, Reverend Claudia, last night, you know, how much I feel that I have gained from this exercise with you here in discussing and talking through A Course in Miracles. It really is so very, very meaningful to me, and I truly understand clearly as a teacher, as our teacher here has told us, that the teacher is the learner. As I am using this opportunity to share with you in a somewhat teaching capacity, but I feel like I'm definitely learning so much more from this process with you, and I'm truly honored and grateful that you are with me and on board and hanging in as one of the Mighty Companions, because it's so important for me, you know, to do my part in God's plan for salvation, and I feel like this is my part in that process, one of my parts. I have others that have come to me that I, you know, the Holy Spirit's instructing me to follow through with, and some things that I'll be working on and doing. And but this radio show has been a tremendous help to me here on blogtalkradio.com, and so I'm truly honored that you're there. I'm so grateful that you're listening in and loyally listening in each day. It's truly a blessing, absolutely a blessing. Our caller number is 347-324-5114. And, of course, we want to say good morning and thank you to those who are listening in on the Internet, whether you're listening in live now or streaming on the Internet as well. And if you'd like to join our email list, we are determined to get that started and start communicating with those who've joined that list this week. And so that's going to be one of our agendas, part of our items on our agenda this weekend. And we're going to get a welcome letter out. You can find us at www.truethoughtministry.com, www.truethoughtministry.com, and we would welcome you there to join us. The condition of reality is the section that we're going to be discussing today, Chapter 11, God or the Ego. The condition of reality, this is a little bit shorter read for us, as our last one has been a couple of days, but sometimes we'll take a whole hour on just one or two paragraphs, so or no. But there's only one more section left in Chapter 11. As we're continuing to move forward here, and very excitedly about what we're learning from A Course in Miracles. The condition of reality, the world as you perceive it cannot have been created by the Father. For the world is not as you see it. So this kind of implies that there are two worlds, if you will. One that we do not see, really, or certainly don't see it clearly. We don't perceive it clearly. The world as you perceive it cannot have been created by the Father, for the world is not as you see it. So that kind of implies that there is another world underneath it, or a real world, if we will, right? God created only the eternal, and everything you see is perishable. Well, how true is that, right? Everything that we appear to see with the body's eyes appears to a phenomenon that appears to arise and then descend. It appears and then it's gone. Everything seems to perish. Therefore, continuing, therefore there must be another world that you do not see. The Bible speaks of a new heaven and a new earth. Yet this cannot be literally true, for the eternal are not recreated. See, to perceive anew is merely to perceive again, implying that before or in the interval between, you were not perceiving at all. So what then is the world that awaits your perception when you see it? What then is this world that awaits your new perception? The miracle is defined for us, our teacher, in A Course in Miracles, as a sudden shift of perception. So what then is the world that awaits your perception when your perception shifts and you begin to see this new world? Every loving thought that the Son of God ever had is eternal. Every loving thought is eternal. The loving thoughts, his mind, the Son of God, that his mind perceives in this world are the world's that we are seeing only reality. They are still perceptions because he still believes that he is separate. Yet they are eternal because they are loving. And being loving, they are like the Father and therefore cannot die. The real world, and so here he interjects the term, the real world can actually be perceived. I want to go back to my very first sentence in the first paragraph. The world as you perceive it cannot have been created by the Father, for the world is not as you see it. Again, implying a different world, or if you will, the real world. And so here he's saying the real world can actually be perceived. All that is necessary is a willingness to perceive nothing else. For if you perceive good and evil, you're accepting both the false and the true, and making no distinction between them. If you perceive good and evil, you're making no distinction between them. You're accepting both the false and the true. See, the ego may see some good, but never sees only good. And that's why its perceptions are so variable. It does not reject goodness entirely, for that you could not accept. But it always adds something that is not real to the real, thus confusing illusion and reality. For perceptions cannot be partly true. See, if you believe in truth and illusion, you can't tell which is true. To establish your personal autonomy, you tried to create unlike your Father, believing that what you made is capable of being unlike him. Yet everything true is like him. Only the truth is true, we could add here, right? Everything true is like God. Now, this is a very important statement, because that means that if we understand and had a clear perception of God, and as we've been taught, God is mind, God is spirit, God is love, God is infinite mind, infinite spirit, authentic, unconditional, infinite love, then anything else that's not like God could not be real. We could also say that God is life, or love is life. Life is the extension of love itself. And there's something like death or sickness or sin or anything like that is not something that could be real, because it's not of God. It is not as God. Being loving, I want to back up a little bit. The loving thoughts of the mind of the Son of God, his mind perceives in this world, are the world's only reality. They are still perceptions because he still believes that he is separate, yet they are eternal because they are loving. And being loving, they are like the Father, and therefore cannot die. The real world can actually be perceived, for all that is necessary is a willingness to perceive nothing else. So the ego may see some good, but never only good. But it always adds something that is not real to the real and keeps us confused. It's always confusing illusion and reality. Everything true is like God. Okay? Everything true is like Him. Perceiving only the real world will lead you to the real heaven, because it will make you capable of understanding it. It's almost like what I'm hearing here is that we need to disregard anything that's not real. Because the confusion of illusion and reality, and confusing the two as the same, okay, as death and life as being real, is leading us away from heaven. It's leading us away from truth. Perceiving only the real world will lead you to the real heaven, because it will make you capable of understanding it. So we need to disregard anything that's not like God, because everything true is like Him. Paragraph 4, continuing, the perception of goodness is not knowledge, but the denial of the opposite of goodness enables you to recognize a condition in which opposites do not exist. The denial of the opposite of goodness enables you to recognize a condition in which opposites do not exist. And this is the condition of knowledge. There are no opposites in heaven. There are no opposites in knowledge. There's no contrast. There's no conflict. There's no confusion. There is only truth. There is only what is eternal, I'm adding. And this is the condition of knowledge. Without this awareness, you have not met its conditions. And until you do, you will not know it is yours already. You have made many ideas that you've placed between yourself and your Creator. And these beliefs are the world as you perceive it. You have made many ideas. I want to interject here, as I was listening to Raj yesterday, and he was talking about thinking and how so very important it is for us to recognize that God did not create us as thinkers. The thinking implies a thinker, just like a belief implies a believer, and neither one of those were created by God. God did not create believers, and God did not create thinkers. God extended herself, and you are one with God. There's no autonomous thinking there, or that capability, or even of creation without being one with God. In other words, you have no autonomy to create or to think or even to believe. There's only knowing in truth. But since we've separated ourselves from knowing, we have only the ability to perceive. But we can acknowledge, if you will, I'm trying to look for the right word here, through conscious awareness what God is being. We acknowledge it simply by experiencing it. No thinking required. Just simply by being conscious and aware of the movement of the mind of love, the movement of the mind of God. You have made, continuing, many ideas that you've placed between yourself and your Creator, and these beliefs are the world as you perceive it. So if we recognize that thinking is not our function, believing is not our function, our only function is love, and that is when we are joined in spirit, in mind, with the Holy Spirit, nothing more than our right mind, then we're not doing any thinking. Father, thy will, thy thoughts, we could say, not mine. Rule out of me all self-thoughts. Thy will be done, not mine. Thy thoughts are my thoughts. Father, your thoughts are my thoughts. Rule out of me all self-thoughts. Because what we're seeing in this reading is that those thoughts, the very thinking that we're doing all the time, is what creates the obstacles to the awareness of the presence of God, to the awareness of the presence of love, to the awareness of the presence of what is real, the real world. It is perceivable when we quit our thinking. Very important. Very important. You have made many ideas, thoughts, if you will, that you have placed between yourself and your Creator. And these beliefs are the world as you perceive. And what is a belief? A belief, to me, as I describe it, is an idea that you just keep thinking. And when you send out messengers, even for illusion, when you send out messengers, they return with a validation of your belief. You have an idea, and you look out, you literally project it out upon the world, and then you look out and to see if it's real. And oh, well, there it is. You see, death is real. You believe an idea of death. You believe an idea because you keep thinking. And as you keep thinking it, you're sending out projection and you're witnessing it as an experience or the perception of an experience as if it's real. And the witnesses return and say, yep, this so-and-so died over there and so-and-so died over here and that little creature over there. You're projecting a belief into a dreamscape, just like you do every night when you lay down and go to sleep. You have dreams. You're in a dream, a world, a universe that you have projected into your mind, a 3D projection that appears to be real and concrete and form and gravity. Are you breathing in your dreams? I've shared with you before, I've come to realize that I don't think I wear glasses. I think I'm actually a young, vibrant man. I don't have age. There's no age going on that I can tell. I never feel old in my dreams. I just have this visible and tangible manifestation, this identifiable manifestation of myself that I call the I, me, Tony, whatever, and that this image is subject to the same rules and laws that I perceive here in this waking, walking dream, if you will, where I have this visible body and it appears to be concrete and I appear to be living or residing within this recognizable form, if you will, this image. But this is not me. If God and I are one, then the truth must be that everything, including me, is like Him. But I have placed ideas about myself and continuing to give those ideas a preference in my mind. They have formed into beliefs that I keep projecting into a dream, witnessing back to me that, oh, I'm right. If I believe in death, death is real. I see it. I experience it. We see what we expect to see. In other words, we're projecting an idea onto a screen, and it returns an image that appears to be concrete, what we call form, matter. Truth is not absent here, but it is obscure. Next sentence. You do not know the difference between what you have made and what God created. And so you do not know the difference between what you have made and what you have created. To believe that you can perceive the real world is to believe that you can know yourself. And you can know God because it is His will to be known. The real world is all that the Holy Spirit has saved for you out of what you have made. And to perceive only this is salvation, because it is the recognition, recognizing, it is the recognition that reality is only what is true. The condition of reality, the title of this section then, is to be able to perceive only what is true. How do we do that? By disregarding everything that's not true. But we hold on to their beliefs, do we not? That's why the thinking is what binds us. We need to quit thinking, literally. We sit down, we become present, we meditate, and we just say, you know what, I'm not going to listen. I'm just going to quieten my mind. I'll listen, but I won't be attached. I won't be, and I'm going to push it off to the background. And, you know, when I'm meditating now, I kind of more and more feel like I'm moving my awareness away from or back away from the stream of constant thoughts. It's always there. It's just constant thinking. But I've discovered I can dissociate, if you will. I can disregard it. I can become not attached. And just things just pop up. To me, it's almost like those little bubbles, you know, the kids, they have these little wands, you know, and they dip them in the solution and they blow on it. And it creates a bubble, right? Well, that to me is almost like thoughts. When I'm meditating, they're just bubbles. I mean, their thoughts can, you know, but if the bubble pops, it only has a life. It's a thought only has power that I give it with my awareness of it and my attachment to it. So if I let go of it, it pops. Like that little bubble. It's over. It's gone. And another one arises, and another one arises, and another one arises. And I can choose each one. Am I going to grab it and hold on to it and take a ride with it? Or am I just going to leave it alone? Because if I leave it alone and just witness it in quietude, in quietness, in silence, then it just pops, it just disappears, goes back into the nothingness within which it came. The condition of reality is simply the recognition that reality is only what is true. Truth is not absent, but it is obscured, and it's obscured by the very thoughts that are streaming through our mind. As I was driving to the grocery store yesterday, I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to think today. I just want to witness what I'm experiencing. I want to feel it, and feeling is so important, my friends, that we get in touch with our feeling. Get in touch with our feeling. And as a feeling comes into your experience, ask yourself, is this coming from my thoughts, or am I just experiencing and becoming aware of the world, not opinionating about it, not positioning about it, not judging it. I'm just experiencing it. And what is the feeling? What is that feeling? This feeling of presence. Presence is a feeling. that I feel sometimes is just palpable. I'm being present. And my first step in it every time is to just catch my breath. In other words, am I breathing? So I was witnessing my breath. I was just paying attention to my breath as I'm driving down the road going to the grocery store yesterday. I've also noticed that I don't speed when I do that. I mean, I don't go too fast. I don't go too slow. Spirit said, driving the bus. But we can disregard those thoughts. And that is our practice. That is our practice. So tomorrow we're going to take up the next session, and we'll probably talk about this tomorrow and Sunday because it's about 4 or 5 pages, but it's the problem and the answer. And this is a very beautiful, the problem and the answer. We've discussed now the conditions of reality. We've talked about the dynamics of the ego. You know, as all of these chapters are, right, literally filled with treasure. We've talked about waking to redemption, and we've talked about the inheritance of God's child and moving from darkness to light. This chapter, as all of them, are absolutely filled with treasure. And tomorrow, we're simply going to unpack it a little bit and break it down into this very simple thing, the problem and the answer. And what we're going to talk about, there's only one problem. If there's only one problem, there's only one answer. And it's so simple. People think that this is such a complicated teaching. But as we continue to unpack it, we begin to recognize that it is the simplest of teachings. We finally get to the problem, the idea of separation. And we finally get to the answer, letting go of a false idea, a false thought system. It's a thought system based on an entire thought system based on one idea. And it appears in a multitude of forms. But it's all just one thing, manifested out of one thing or one false perception, one error in perception. The problem and the answer. I'm really looking forward to reading this with you tomorrow, as I'm looking forward to this moment right now. Today we're going to talk about lesson 115, because we're on day 115 of this year, for morning and evening review. Now remember, we're going to meditate for 5 minutes on the first one in the morning and 5 minutes on the second one in the afternoon, preferably just before we go to sleep. To meditate for 5 minutes. Allow this to just come into our thoughts, our mind, and to be with it so that as we go to sleep and drift off to sleep, we allow our unconscious mind to work on these principles throughout the night. You know, we have a desire, and we set our intention, and through that intention, we adjust our environment, and we ultimately experience a shift in perception. We ultimately experience the result of our desire. Salvation is my only function. We discussed about today in the conditions of reality, for reality, that it's not so complicated. Our function is not to give thoughts and judgments and opinions and positions to illusions, to think, rationalize and reason and you know, just spend all of our time, our mind power, you know, making up and fixing up an illusion. Drama, drama, drama. It's real simple. Salvation is my only function. And he says it so clearly here in this first sentence. My function here is to forgive the world. not for all the errors that the world has made, but for all the errors I have made. My function is to forgive the world for all the errors I have made. Well, after reading our textbook today, isn't it revealing that the errors that I have made are simply to misperceive the world? No harm in it. If there were any such thing, and there is no such thing as harm, one would say only that we are binding ourselves to an illusion and delaying the awakening to the reality of what we are. No harm, no foul, no problem, but in this illusory perception, this misperception of the world, that is to say that we're not forgiving it, we're judging it, judging is thinking, and in this misperception action, judging, we're binding ourselves to false ideas about things that God never created for us to experience. So our only function is to forgive the world for all of the errors I have made. Because in doing this, then I am released from them, and I'm also releasing all the world. I can go from a misperception, the real world, and turning it into a vision, an illusion, a twisting, a modulation of what God is being into some fabrication that's not real. Sin and sickness and death, bodies and physical form and matter and all that stuff, that's not the real world. So I've thrown a cloak of darkness, which is nothing more than a misperception of what it is, over it so that I can't actually see the light of the love that it is. Everything is loving you. And you are one with all that exists. For thus I am released. I released from them with all the world. As our brother Jesus Christ said when he was here just a instant ago, I have overcome the world. What did he mean? He meant that he had released the world. The whole world had been released from any potential misperception. All of his misperceptions were over. He had awakened. As we said earlier, this week, in fact, and last week, the resurrection occurred before the crucifixion. The crucifixion was nothing. Really, it was nothing. The resurrection occurred before the crucifixion because he had already overcome the world. He recognized his only function was to tell you what you needed to know so that you could recognize the problem and the answer to the problem. Our second review lesson is my part is essential to God's plan for salvation. See, I am essential to the plan of God for the salvation of the whole world, for he gave me his plan that I might save the world. And how could you save the world, you're asking, right? How could I save the world? Little old me, how could that happen? Because your function here is to forgive the world for all the errors that you have made. When you quit judging the world, you're no longer making errors. When you forgive the world for the judgments that you've made upon it, then you're releasing it. And you are fulfilling your plan, your part in God's plan for salvation. And that is the plan that he had given to you, so that you can save the world. Save it from what? From your judgment. Save the world. I'm adding, from your judgment, from your thoughts. Your thoughts, not God's thoughts. But when you let go of the idea that you have thoughts, that you could have thoughts, that you could have judgments, opinions, positionalities, and you let go of any of that belief, an idea that you keep thinking, letting go of that idea completely, releasing that idea, you forgive the world for the errors that you have made. Because we would like to believe from time to time that the world is causing me to judge it. So-and-so did something to me. I'm a victim of this circumstance, so I need to take an action. I'm making a judgment here, and I was wrong. Or sometimes it can go the other way. The ego will use every opportunity to bind you to a dream for its own perceived existence. You're perceiving it as an existence. That's why it has an existence. And as soon as you disregard it, those thoughts pop like that bubble. They are no more. The ego is no more. As Buddha said, when he was asked if he was enlightened, as I've been told the story goes, he simply replied, I am awake. I am the dreamer of the dream. You and I, my friend, can do exactly that. We can accept our function, which is to forgive the world, and we can accept our part in God's plan for salvation. Because he has given his plan to you to quit judging. On the hour today, we're going to have 5 minutes of meditation in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening, but on the hour, repeat and consider salvation is my only function here. And on the half hour, my part is essential to God's plan for salvation. And that's our lesson for today. So join with me, if you will, my brothers and sisters, in a moment of silence and prayer. Father, let not your holy world escape my sight today, nor let my ears be deaf to all the hymns of gratitude that the world is singing underneath the sounds of fear. There is a real world which the present moment, the present holds safe from all past mistakes, all errors that I have made in my judgment. There is a real world, and the present moment holds that real world safe from all of my misperception, all my past mistakes. And I pray, Father, that you would help me to see only this world before my eyes today. That you would help me to see only this world before my eyes today. The real world. That you would help me to be present to the truth that everything that is real is like you, Father. And these favors we ask in humility and gratitude and with curiosity. In your name, Father. Amen. I love you so very much, my brothers and sisters. Thank you for spending some time with me today on the best hour. And we'll be back with another episode this weekend, tomorrow and Sunday. Looking forward, absolutely looking forward to being with you again.
Hello again, dearly beloved and mighty companions. This is your host, Tony Williamson, saying once again, thanks so much for joining us on today's episode of The Best Hour. If you'd like to reach me directly, You can find me at tony@truthoughtministry.com. That's T-O-N-Y at truthoughtministry.com. And if you go to www.truthoughtministry.com, you can join our email list there as well. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. Thanks so much, my brothers and sisters. God bless.